Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
Hi, everyone. My name is Theo Hill. Welcome back to One Day at a Time in Recovery in Baltimore, where I talk one-on-one with other folks like me who are dealing with their own addiction and recovery, and where we learn together from each other's stories. I want to let you know that because of the pandemic, we're recording this episode from my home. I have 3 beautiful grandchildren who live here with us. You might hear a little noise from them, so thanks for your patience with that. Welcome to my home, listeners. I have a very distinguished guest this evening. His name is Mike, and we've known each other for a long time. Welcome, Mike, to One Day at a Time.
Thank you.
I'd like for you to tell me about yourself, your family, what life was like for you when you were young. When did you get first introduced to drugs?
I think I smoked my first joint at 8 or 9. I can't remember. Stole it from my brother. Went on and did, just was a pothead, did a little acid here and there, and, you know, just was having fun. It was fun because I didn't have any responsibilities through school, went in the Army, and then it became a problem.
Okay, so where were you born at? Where were you raised at?
I was raised on the Maryland side of Washington, D.C., 6 miles outside the border.
Okay, so you mentioned that you first was introduced to drugs then. What happened next?
I did the drugs did me. I went in the Army, and they didn't care what you did as long as you made formation. They condoned drinking. You had promotion parties, all of that. But I did continue doing the acid and just partying, ruined my life in the Army.
When did you realize that you had a problem?
Well, I drank 3 bottles of wine I got from this wine lady, and I forgot that the wine gave me diarrhea. And I pooped my pants, so I came into barracks and took my clothes off and wiped the best I could and tried to pin it off on somebody else and said, look, some dummy pooped his pants in there. And then I went into my room and said, little jackpot thing, a guy, yes. You know, I think it's going too far.
Right, okay. That's what finally caused you to do something about your addiction?
Well, not exactly.
Okay.
I got out of the Army and the cocaine epidemic get hit. So I think I did 1 line of coke, and then my buddies were in the back shooting up. There was PCP involved, and I came through the door and asked them what they were doing. They told me, and I said I wanted to try it. They said, no, you don't. And I don't know whether they wanted money or kind of tired of me bothering them. And I shot cocaine for the first time, fell in love, and went straight downhill.
When did you first get into recovery?
I flipped out on PCP and ended up in Spring Grove, and I was scared straight.
Okay.
So I didn't do nothing for 2 years. And I was going to meetings, but I wasn't meeting nobody, didn't have any working steps, no sponsor, no nothing.
Right.
So consequently, since my wife was getting high, wasn't her fault, but I ended up going back to getting high and lost everything. Ended up on the street of Baltimore.
Okay. That downhill spiral. So,
yes, sir.
So you lost everything. You lost
everything.
Your wife,
my kids,
job, home,
everything.
They call that being desperate. And they also call in our literature, right, that when we were beaten, we became willing.
Right. Dereliction.
Yes, sir.
All that.
Okay. So you went through that.
Yes, sir.
All right. So what made you surrender to the program?
I was homeless, living on the street, eating out of soup kitchens, staying in shelters, and I went with this brother out to the horse track. We were going to win a bunch of money, and I wrote a check that wasn't no good.
Of course.
And he thought that I ripped him off. We got in a fight, and I didn't have nowhere to go, so I went to a hospital and told him I was an addict and felt like killing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me back to Spring Grove, where I came from.
Mm-hmm.
But this time, they set me up with a rehab. It was the first disease concept rehab in the world a guy came up with. And I'd never heard it called disease before. And I remembered everything. I wasn't working a program, but I remembered a little bit about the 2 years.
Right.
So I got in there, and I slept the first week and then started paying attention. And they sent me to an 18-month treatment center and started working steps. Had a sponsor this time and was doing the program the way it's supposed to be done.
Wow. That's fantastic. How long ago was that?
31 years.
So have you gone through the recovery process all the way up to now, or did you have a little slip in between there?
No, from then till now, I've been
fantastic,
completely abstinent.
Fantastic. Would you like to tell our audience a little bit about recovery? Because you came from a long way to where you are now today.
It's such a vast number of ways. The program, I noticed steps right away. If I don't change, I'm going to still be the same person. You take the nuts out of a fruitcake, you still got a fruitcake. Okay. So I got to work steps and get because I used for a reason, so I had to find out what that reason was. I felt, they say addicts are egomaniacs and self-centered or with low self-esteem. So I'm either feeling low self-esteem or I'm feeling ego. More than like normal people, they just go on the even, mind's up and down. So it's either big like that. So, and the reason I felt low self-esteem is because I didn't feel worthy of doing things, you know. I just, because of my low self-esteem, my marriage didn't work out, went in the Army, and the things that I did, I condemned myself. You know, I went in the Army, I had 25 counts of statements, 5 Article 15s, a field grade, and they tried to kick me out on Chapter 13 because I was rebellious. That was the issue. I was very rebellious. You know, it's hard for me to somebody tell me to do something without, you know, then the ego comes up and then the low self-esteem comes up when the ego comes up and then I get knocked down and I get arrested or from my father used to beat me and I deserved it. I went on they had a big issue with a guy in the back of a paddy wagon. I tried to fight some cops in a Maryland, little Maryland jail, and they took me for one of those rides and I deserved it. Mm-hmm. You know, the things I did to myself, I felt like I'm that kind of person, and I'm doomed to be that kind of person. I didn't see no way out. I was, you know, it was more depression than anything else with me, you know.
Going after the drugs, right, is one thing, but recovery is totally different as far as going after that. You need some help.
The solution is spiritual in nature.
Right.
And it's a spiritual program.
Right.
But it's a simple program for complicated people like me. And to get on it, like when I was at the end, I was shooting straight raw heroin. I would get up, didn't even have no money, finding a way to how I'm going to do that. So I had that habit. So I have to develop new positive habits when I get around here. And what do they say? I get up, I pray to help my higher power stay clean. I'm thinking about where I'm going to go to my meeting that day. And I develop a habit of doing that. There's fun things you could do in recovery. They have conventions, pool parties, picnics, all kinds of stuff. So you got things to do, you know, and just going to meetings, it's fun if a person gets involved. You know, you thirst for the, you know, we go out and get ice cream all the time, you know.
So, not to mention you ride a bike.
Oh, yeah. I do ride a motorcycle. So but we don't go use drugs. We look for Cracker Barrels and get fat. So, I mean, my body's, liver's gone, everything's gone anyway, so it'd be life-threatening. But anyway, I wouldn't do it. But, yeah, you develop a habit of doing stuff, and you feel a little bit better. Like I said, with that big valleys and high mountains, it was like that when I came around. But now it's so much like a habit. You know, that's where the steps come from, too. You were talking about putting yourself back together. You got the first three, I can, he can, I'll let him, making a decision. But then you got the fourth and fifth steps, the inventory, and you share it with somebody. And that, and some people have deep secrets, and they get them out there.
Yeah.
But the important thing about the fourth step, you find out why you did things for the sixth and seventh, which are the character defects. Me, I'm unique in my character defect, patience. I don't have no patience. Sometimes I'm getting older, I feel like I ain't got no tolerance. You know, I'm unique in different areas. We're all the same, but we're unique in different areas.
Right.
And that's how we get through that. And then we pray for our higher power's will and the maintenance steps later, and we just help another addict, and that makes us feel good, and we get spiritual awakenings, you know? It's great watching somebody that I help do good, you know? Makes me feel, my self-worth feel better, and that's the way it works.
What's hard about telling your story, and what's worthwhile telling your story?
When I tell the negative parts of it, it's hard. I cried when I first did them.
Okay.
You know, I couldn't, it was hard, now I can say them, you know, but the positive things, You know, we lose people in here. You know, mm-hmm. death is hard to you know, accept. You know, those are hard things to talk about. But I feel good after I get it out, and it's like, you know, you got a feel good side and a hard side. But see, I can make a mountain out of a molehill. That's what I tend to do, but I try not to do that. I just lost my wife, but I have been smothered with friends in the program. Yes. I haven't. Pain's inevitable. Misery's optional. As long as I go through the program, I don't have to go through that misery. And I haven't had hardly any event of misery. I cried like a baby when I found it out because I got to let it out, yes. You know, because if I hold it in, it'll fester. Yeah. So therefore, once I let it out, I can accept it easier.
Mike, I want to thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
On this episode of One Day at a Time in Recovery in Baltimore. I want to thank you for listening. I'm Theo Hill. Let's talk again soon.